This edition of the Generations Radio program originally aired in 2011. For additional shows on hundreds of topics, search our archives at generations.org.
Welcome to the Generations Radio broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host, with you today. Today we want to talk about the very, very basic issue of human life. Now, we struggle, we try to retain some faith, family, and freedom on this program, but friends, without the sanctity of human life, without the right to life, there is no family. You're devastating the family when you're killing 80 million babies since 1960. The family is disintegrating because the love for children is dissipating when a parent might decide to eliminate the life of that child in the womb. Ladies and gentlemen, we're fighting for the faith. The Christian faith is gone. The faith is gone. If we deny the right to life, that is the sixth commandment. If we're killing God's children wholesale, hey, the Christian faith is dissipating big time. And churches everywhere advocate abortion, or at the very least, are not pro-life and they won't preach it. That's why so many evangelicals have abortions. We're going to talk about that in just a moment, but denying the right for freedoms certainly is involved in denying the right to life, because life is a basic freedom. Friends, faith, family, and freedom disappearing, especially when we give up the right to life. And that's why this book by Abby Johnson is important. Abby Johnson, a former Planned Parenthood employee, and yet raised a Christian, always in Christian church, always having faith in God, faith in Jesus Christ, all the way through her career at Planned Parenthood, as well as her own abortions. She was raised in a Christian home, a pro-life church. And yet, eventually, she became part of Planned Parenthood on the business end of things. She advocated abortion for a long time. She had problems with it, second thoughts, but still was involved from 2005 as an employee and a director for Planned Parenthood until one day she wound up participating in abortion herself. Here, from her book, listen carefully. And folks, let me say this, that if you have children listening right now, some of these are fairly intense stories, so you may or may not want to include them in today's broadcast. Here is Abby Johnson. Quote, I had occasionally performed diagnostic ultrasounds for clients before. It was one of the services we offered to confirm pregnancies and estimate how far along they were. The familiarity of preparing for an ultrasound soothed my uneasiness at being in this room. I applied the lubricant to the patient's belly and then maneuvered the ultrasound probe until her uterus was displayed on the screen and adjusted the probe's position to capture the image of the fetus. I was expecting to see what I had seen in past ultrasounds. Usually, depending on how far along the pregnancy was and how the fetus was turned, I'd first see a leg, a head, or some partial image of the torso and would need to maneuver a bit to get the best possible image, but this time, the image was complete. I could see the entire perfect profile of a baby, and just that quickly, the flutter of the warm memory of Grace, her firstborn child, was replaced with a surge of anxiety. What am I about to see? My stomach tightened. I don't want to watch what is about to happen. The cool air of the exam room left me feeling chilled. My eyes still glued to the image of this perfectly formed baby. I watched as a new image entered this video screen. The cannula, a straw-shaped instrument attached to the end of a suction tube, had been inserted into the uterus and was nearing the baby's side. It looked like an invader on the screen. Out of place. Wrong. It just looked wrong. My heart sped up. Time slowed. I didn't want to look, but I didn't want to stop looking either. I could not watch. I was horrified, but fascinated at the same time, like a gawker slowing as he drives past some horrific automobile wreck, not wanting to see a mangled body, but looking all the same. My eyes flew to the patient's face. Tears flowed from the corners of her eyes. It's almost over, I whispered. I wanted to say focused on her, but my eyes shot back to the image on the screen. At first, the baby didn't seem aware of the cannula. It gently probed the baby's side, and for a quick second, I felt relief. Of course, I thought, the fetus doesn't feel pain. I had reassured countless women of this, as I'd been taught by Planned Parenthood. The fetal tissue feels nothing as it is removed. Get a grip, Abby. This is a simple, quick medical procedure. My head was working hard to control my responses. I couldn't shake an inner disquiet that was quickly mounting to horror as I watched the screen. The next movement was the sudden jerk of a tiny foot as the baby started kicking, as if he is trying to move away from the probing invader. As the cannula pressed in, the baby began struggling to turn and to twist away. It seemed clear to me the fetus could feel the cannula and did not like the feeling, and then the doctor's voice broke through, startling me. Beam me up, Scotty, he said, like heartily. totally to the nurse. He was telling her to turn on the suction. In an abortion, the suction isn't turned on until the doctor feels he has a cannula in exactly the right place. I had a sudden urge to yell stop, to shake the woman and say, look at what's happening to your baby. Wake up. Hurry. Stop them. But even as I thought these words, I looked at my own hand holding the probe. I was one of them performing this act. My eyes shot back to the screen again. The cannula was already being rotated by the doctor, and now I could see the tiny body violently twisting with it. For the briefest moment, it looked as if the baby were just being wrung out like a dishcloth, twirled, squeezed, and then the little body crumpled and began disappearing into the cannula before my eyes. The last thing I saw was the tiny, perfectly formed backbone sucked into the tube, and then everything was gone. And the uterus was empty. Totally empty. In a moment, Abby Jones on Generations.
Hello, my friends. This is your host, Kevin Swanson, with a special message. You know, we face tremendous attacks on faith, family, and freedom in our day. This generation sits on a knife edge, and the social and economic pressures are rising exponentially. But we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual wickedness in high places. And the greatest need of the day is faith, faith-filled men, godly men to be husbands, fathers, and leaders. So this year, Generations is sponsoring not one, but two men's discipleship intensives for fathers and sons, young men, and church leaders. We are planning these men discipleship intensives for Paoli, Indiana for July and Elizabeth, Colorado for November. Join me with Scott Brown, Mark Robinette, and others in Paoli, Indiana or Elizabeth, Colorado this year. These events are space limited, so you need to register now for it. Register at generations.org/events.
Welcome back to the Generations Radio Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host, with you today. And with me by phone is Abby Johnson. She is the author of a book called Unplanned, the dramatic story of a former Planned Parenthood leader's eye-opening journey across the lifeline. A very dramatic tale. Abby, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Hey, you know, as I'm reading this book, I'm just amazed at how God works in a person's life. I mean, that's sort of the story here, isn't it?
Yes, definitely. He has worked in my life over the past couple years in a very, very big way.
I mean, it's amazing. How did you come to work at Planned Parenthood in 2005?
Well, I actually started volunteering with them in 2001. As a college student, and
okay.
Just grew up pro-life, but didn't really, you know, couldn't really defend my pro-life beliefs necessarily. Just, you know, kind of said whatever my parents said, and they said they were pro-life, and so I did too. But when I got to college, just, you know, got kind of sucked into the idea of, you know, freedom of choice and, you know, women's liberation movement and all that kind of stuff. And so Planned Parenthood was very appealing, and they sounded like a good organization. They provide free services, and a very little part of their service is abortion, and they want to prevent the need for abortion. And so, you know, it sounded like a pretty good place to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, was it a conversion of sorts to move from a pro-life family and a somewhat conservative church background to being involved with Planned Parenthood, or was it kind of a gradual thing? You just kind of amalgamated into what they were doing?
Yeah, it was pretty gradual. I mean, I didn't think, oh, now I'm going from pro-life to being pro-choice. I mean, I just thought, well, I mean, you know, I'm pro-life, and then just, you know, gradually I kind of thought, well, I mean, I can still say I'm for life, right? Because I'm wanting to reduce the number of abortions, and, you know, and then just slowly but surely I just kept coming around to the idea that elective abortion was okay, and I just kept justifying what I was doing, and then eventually, you know, I was very staunchly pro-choice.
Yeah. Now, all this time, you would consider yourself a Christian. You attended church, at least off and on.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I believe that it was God's will that I work at Planned Parenthood. I mean, that may seem bizarre to many people, but, you know, I would, you know, tell my mom, who was always, saying that it was not God's will that I work in the abortion industry. I would tell her, I would say, you know, Mom, I pray that if it's not God's will for me, that I won't get this promotion or I won't get this raise or, you know, I won't be successful in this company. And I keep getting promotions and I keep getting awards and raises. And so clearly, you know, this is where God wants me to be. And, I was going to church.
Yeah.
I was going to a church that supported abortion and that supported Planned Parenthood. And the pastor of church would frequently send young women that he counseled over to me so that I would help convince them to have an abortion. So it was very easy for me to believe that, you know, God was a part of what I was doing.
You know, you had one point where you visited a church and they were rather direct with you and said, you know, you can't be a member of this church as somebody who's supporting the abortion industry. And so there was some pressure. You certainly felt pressure from Mom and from other sources that would take a stand and say this sort of approach is not correct. And yet I guess you saw that all this was in the bounds of orthodoxy. And okay, we've got some disagreement within these Christian churches. Some are more narrow-minded than others. Would that be fair to say that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still, I still look back at that church and I'm still, I mean, I was angry then, but now I'm just very disappointed in the way that they handled the situation. You know, some people say, oh, well, that's good. You know, they did the right thing. But, I mean, I would say that they did absolutely the wrong thing because there was no opportunity for ministry there.
Yeah.
You know, as Christians, we shouldn't just say, you know, well, gosh, you're look at you, you big sinner. You know, you can't come to our church. You know, what we should do is say, you know, gosh, we'd love for you to come to this church, and why don't we talk about you being a member here? Why don't we, you know, why don't we talk about you being a part of the ministry here? Why don't we help you grow in your faith, and let's talk about what you're doing, and, you know, why don't we get you involved with this person or that ministry or whatever, and not just shut that door?
Right. We have to open up opportunities for discipleship. Otherwise, nobody's going to know what Jesus wants and how to walk in his ways. Now, your story is very, very riveting. I mean, I tell you what, a couple tears came to my eyes as I watched what was happening in your mind, in your heart, in your life, as God worked in you. Can you just give us a little synopsis of it? Folks have to get the book, I'm Planned, if they want to get the full story. But just walk us through that a little bit. How did things change for you?
Well, a couple things. I mean, one was part of the business plan of Planned Parenthood. That was definitely changing. But ultimately what changed my mind was watching a live abortion take place, an ultrasound-guided abortion take place, which is very, very rare. It does never happen at Planned Parenthood. But I got to see one, and I saw an ultrasound-guided abortion take place on a 13-week-old child in the womb, and I saw that child begin to struggle and move away from the abortion instrument, and I was shocked because I didn't believe that, you know, children in the womb could feel anything. Planned Parenthood had told me that they didn't have any sensory development until 28 weeks, and so I believed Planned Parenthood to be telling me the truth, and I was very surprised to see that this child was feeling pain and feeling what was happening to its body.
It's a shocking, shocking thing when you see that a life is being taken. And, you know, I wonder, Abby, if there are folks that just aren't facing reality. You know, they don't see the ultrasound pictures. They don't watch it. They don't think about it. But if they were to watch it, if they were to think about it for more than a couple seconds, at some point, reality would become very, very real to them, and maybe they just don't want to face that.
Yeah, I think it's definitely that. And I think that, you know, even for people who do know and do see it, I think there's just kind of this apathy that's running rampant in our country. And I think a big part of it starts in our churches. I mean, we look at the statistics and we see that over 70% of women that have abortions are Christians. And the majority of churches that I go into are churches where the pastors and clergy don't feel comfortable speaking out against abortion from the pulpit. And, you know, we've got kind of, I mean, we're in a society where abortion has creeped in to Christianity, and it's really sad.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think the truth needs to get out. And granted, the other side is trying to do that. That is the pro-lifers on the sidewalk. And I have to tell you that I'm the guy that's been standing on the street in front of abortion clinics since 1984 myself. Is that important, first of all, that the pro-life message continue to get out there in front of everybody? Not that everybody does it right, but the fact that somebody's out there just holding up the sign and saying, hey, this is wrong.
Absolutely. I mean, I wouldn't be here today doing this if there hadn't have been people outside praying for me constantly for those 8 years that I was at the clinic. You know, just that public witness is so important, and not just for the people that are going into the clinic and not just for the workers, but also just for the community. Just to be out there as a public witness for your community and to let people know that there are abortions happening here, right where you live, right where you drive by every day. Children are being killed right here in this community. And people need to wake up to the tragedy that's taking place right under their noses. And I remember we would have people that would come into our clinic and they would say, you know, I mean, these are clients. And they would say, I don't understand why people are out there. It's not like you guys do abortions. I was thinking, yeah, just like every day. You know, I mean, people don't even know what they're walking into when they're walking into a Planned Parenthood. So if the clients of Planned Parenthood don't even know, how do we expect the community to know? And that's what that public presence is doing. You're providing education for the community.
You know, I was amazed reading about you taking that turn. You're sitting there in the office a week after that abortion you witnessed, and just it was all flooding in on you, and you decided that this is time to walk over to the other side. And I'm just amazed, Abby, that you were willing to go to the other side. I mean, you literally got in your car and drove to the pro-life office that was just a block or two away. It just amazes me. Why did you do that?
I didn't have anywhere else to go. I mean, I had nowhere else to go. Pretty much all of my friends were in the Planned Parenthood movement. And I knew that by leaving Planned Parenthood, which I knew I had to do, I was losing everybody.
Yeah.
And I knew that I was going to lose all my friends, that I was going to be starting over. And I thought, you know, who am I going to start over with? And how am I going to do this?
But weren't you afraid of these people? I mean, they had been opposing you for 6 or 7 years. Weren't you afraid of these people?
I wasn't afraid of them. I didn't know how they were going to react to me walking in, honestly. I mean, I thought, you know, I've been standing there opposing them. I've been sitting there, you know, trying to discredit them for 8 years. And they had every right to look at me and just slam the door in my face and say, you know, you need help, go get lost. You know, go find it on your own. But I had to take a chance, you know, that they would help me. They said that they would. They always said that they would from across the fence. And I just had to trust them. I had nobody else to trust.
Well, I think in the ultimate sense, it was a credible step of faith. I mean, as you describe that, the chills go up and down my back to think that you just up and turn your back to all of this stuff you've been with for years and years. And then you walk into an office and meet people who have opposed you or your position for all that time. And I think that just takes faith to do it. I mean, you had to be praying. You had to be in, you know, connecting with the Lord in all of this.
Oh, yeah. I knew that God was guiding me there.
Right.
I mean, I knew that I kept praying, like, God, please show me anybody else. Please put somebody else's, you know, name in my head. Please show me somebody else. But there was just nobody. And I knew he was leading me to them. I knew it. And I thought, okay, you know, I mean, if that's where you tell me to go, then I'll go. But I felt, I felt like, you know, if he's taking me there, then there's a reason. And maybe, you know, I thought maybe it is so that they could slap me in the face and tell me, you know, that I've been rude to them and just so that they could kind of get their revenge. I didn't know. But, you know, gosh, it was better than I ever could have expected.
They received you.
Yes, with open arms.
Incredible. And you have worked with them. These are your friends now.
Yeah, so my closest friends, yes. Well, yes, I mean, because I did have to leave all my friends. I mean, my friends who I loved and cared about at the clinic, they turned on me and they testified against me in court.
So,
I mean, I had to start over.
Did anybody come with you?
No.
No. Let's talk about both sides. Let's get back to Planned Parenthood. Who works at Planned Parenthood? Are these ordinary people like yourself, some church background, some no church background? I'm sure they have good intentions.
Yeah. They're good people, people with kids, families. They're not bad people. You wouldn't know that they work at Planned Parenthood. They don't have horns on their head or anything.
Yeah, they don't have the Hitler mustache going.
No, normal. Everyday people, moms, grandmas, you know, sisters, wives, they're just normal people, churchgoers, you know, on the PTO, normal people.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They believe that they're doing the right thing, and they believe that they are saving the lives of women and helping women, you know, with their daily lives by... You know, working at Planned Parenthood.
And looking back, you have to say that they must be terribly, terribly misguided. I mean, they must be thinking they're doing something good, but in effect, they're really giving a lot of credence to the slaughter of millions and millions and millions of babies in this country.
Yeah, they are, and they just don't see it. I mean, there's a very deep disconnect that runs through the pro-abortion movement, and they just don't see it. And, you know, they're trained not to see it. They're trained by the abortion industry not to see it. And it's a sad reality. But people, more and more clinic workers are waking up to that reality. It's very encouraging to see.
Is the pro-life movement making any progress, do you think, Abby?
I do. Yeah, I do. Just from the emails that I get, I mean, clinic workers are turning around and leaving the abortion industry like crazy. I mean, I'm getting emails weekly from abortion clinic workers that are wanting to leave their jobs, and that is very, very encouraging.
You know, it's just really shocking that you have nurses that are fighting for the life of these little preemie babies everywhere, and yet you have abortion clinics across the street doing whatever they can to cease the life of these little ones. Isn't there some kind of a contradiction here? Doesn't some of these nurses and doctors understand what's going on?
Oh, I think that the doctors definitely know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's something much deeper. I don't think it's about the children. It's about the mothers. And it's about the women, and it's only about the women for them. And you're taught and you're trained to only see the women as the patient and to only see their needs, like ignore, you know, the child and the humanity and the personhood of the child.
And they ignore the incredible emotional trauma these ladies go through over the years as they have to come to grips with the fact that whatever's there in the womb is a live person. And as you said throughout the story, and I think this is critical, you talk about your little daughter Grace, even as you're there watching that abortion under the in the abortion clinic, you are seeing effectively your own little one 3 years earlier. I mean, you can't separate that from your mind, can you? As a mother.
No, I think it's easy for me to understand why the abortion industry does not You see, they don't see the women that are hurting from abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes sense, because if an organization has abused you, okay, like Planned Parenthood is abusing and hurting these women, then the women aren't going to return to the place where they were abused, right? They're going to go to a pregnancy resource center, or they're going to go to a church that has a program to help them, or they're going to go somewhere. They're not going to return to that place that harmed them.
Yes.
And so at Planned Parenthood, I mean, I can honestly say that we didn't have women that came in that were crying and hurting about their past abortions.
Mm-hmm.
We had women that came in that said, gosh, I'm just, you know, man, that abortion was so great for me, and I'm just, thank you so much for helping me with that, and now I'm back on track with my life. And, you know, they were so grateful and so thankful that we had helped them with that. And so that's all we saw, was how abortion had impacted their lives in a really great way. Now, we didn't see them 5 years from now, right? We only saw them right then at that moment, a few weeks after their abortion, and they were feeling really great about it.
I'm sure that Planned Parenthood considers these pro-lifers as persecuting them for doing the good things.
Yeah, and so it makes sense that, you know, the abortion industry would say, no, women aren't, you know, they don't suffer from that kind of stuff. I mean, that makes sense, because they're not actually seeing the suffering from their clients. They're only seeing the clients that have positive reactions from abortion. And a lot of the women that work inside the clinic, about 70% of abortion clinic workers have actually had abortions themselves.
Sure.
And so they're on the inside going, no, my abortion was great. I don't have any regrets. You know, I think it's great for everybody. So, I mean, it's hard for them to understand that women do suffer a lot of emotional consequences from abortion.
You talk about Planned Parenthood lying to their clients. Are these bold-faced lies? What are we talking about here?
Well, I mean, just basic informed consent. They're not giving informed consent to their clients. A lot of just physical complications that they're not discussing with their clients. Right off the bat, I mean, what I saw from that abortion that I witnessed, you know, that the child does feel pain, that there is sensory development way before 28 weeks in the womb. And, you know, those are things that they are not being honest about. They're not being truthful with their clients. And, you know, these women want to know the truth, and they deserve to know the truth. If they're asking the questions they want to know, and it matters to them. And, you know, we in the medical community have we have a responsibility to give them honest answers.
Exactly. Let's talk about the pro-lifers. I mean, what can you say to those folks on the other side who are holding up the signs? I know sometimes we want to use the ugly signs. We want to use the shocking signs because we want to wake people up to what they're doing as they rip these little bodies into pieces. What's your thought on how we communicate to the pro-abortion side of things?
I think that we always have to do it in a loving and gentle and compassionate manner.
Yes.
You know, I believe that the signs and, you know, graphic signs, I believe that they do have a place.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't believe that it's in front of an abortion clinic.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that we have to show women the humanity of their child and the life of their child. And we're not going to show that to them in the death of their child.
So live fetus pictures are appropriate. And just being there. You know, if you have 6 or 7 or 8 people standing on the sidewalks, obvious volunteers, nobody's there because they're being paid $38,000 a year for serving. They're just people who care on the sidewalk and hopefully expressing such that they do care. Not in angry, you know, tones where they're cursing at whatever's happening inside, but just open and willing to talk to folks.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that we just really have to be careful with the way that we approach women, and just always be sure that we are not coming off as judgmental, but that we do care about them. And I've had, you know, many says from being out on the sidewalk since I've been pro-life, and almost every time I've had a save, it's been because I use those little tiny fetal models.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
And showing them that this is your child.
Mm-hmm.
This is what your child looks like right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to show them a bloody picture.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to show them their child what happens to their, what their child looks like if they abort. I can show them what their child looks like right now as
sure.
living.
Sure.
And that is so powerful to those
women. Mm-hmm. What about the church, Abby, looking back? Is the church somewhat wishy-washy on this issue? In general, should the church be a little bit more firm on these things in general?
Oh, yeah. The church has got to step up. I mean, we are fighting a spiritual battle, but we are just not putting on the armor of God.
Yeah.
And it's a sad situation right now in our Christian churches. I mean, we are... we do not, in general, have strong clergy that are standing out against abortion from the pulpit. We've got pastors that are scared of offending their congregation. So they're just silent, and their silence is deafening. And while they are standing up there, you know, being quiet, there are almost 4,000 abortions taking place in this country. And it's, you know, every day.
Yeah.
And it's just a really sad state of affairs right now in our churches. And we have got to empower our pastors to start speaking the truth. And, there is no issue that is more pressing or more important than the right to live.
Mm-hmm.
And our pastors are just too scared. A lot of them are too scared to just be honest and be direct.
But, you know, you stand up and you say, let's love our babies. You can't just love some babies and hate others and kill the rest ones you don't want. Let's just stand up and say, love your babies. They're wonderful, sweet gifts from God. And, you know, as you say that and you affirm that, many, 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 many women, mothers, would say yes to that. It takes some work to convince a woman to hate a child to the point that they get rid of it. I mean, that takes work.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I tell women all the time, you know, when they're walking, you know, when I'm sidewalk crossing, I tell women, you know, you will never regret being a mother, but you will regret having an abortion. And, you know, I don't know any woman that has a child that says, gosh, I wish I wouldn't have kids. You know, you'd have to work really hard to dislike your own child.
Yeah.
But women do regret having abortions. They regret it all the time.
Yeah.
Why would you even put yourself through that if you know that one day you're going to regret it?
Well, that's the truth, ladies and gentlemen. Abby Johnson has the courage to walk across that line. And I can't imagine what it took to do that on that day that she walked over to the pro-life side. The book is Unplanned. The author, Abby Johnson, the book is available anywhere on the Internet. Abby, thanks so much for joining us on Generations. This has been wonderful.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Wow, what an interview, friends. Something that can inform all of us concerning the great battle that wages right now, the battle between life and death. And I believe, friends, this is one of the most important battles being waged today in the churches, in the families, in our society. So I would encourage you to pass this interview on to others who need to hear what's happening out there and need to understand the limits of the battlefield. Ladies and gentlemen, you can interact with this radio program by emailing me directly at host@kevinswanson.com. You can also hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.